Paul McDermott has been many things. For those of us of a particular age, he is indelibly one-third of those Australian comedic gods, the Doug Anthony All-Stars, whose other core members were Richard Feidler, now of Conversations fame, of course, writer of best-selling histories and so on, and the good-looking one, Tim Ferguson, whose diagnosis with MS brought the Doug Anthonys to a painful halt in their very prime. Well, Paul McDermott took his mixture of choir boys singing and anarchy to other great successes, notably in shows like Good News Week on the ABC and 10. And indeed, he received the ultimate sign of mainstream success when he was nominated for a Gold Logie. He's done radio, children's books, musical theatre and award-winning short films. And he's right here in the studio. Paul McDermott, welcome to the year that made me.
Thank you very much, Hugh. Lovely to be here with you.
Now, I've been so conditioned by seeing you on stage and on TV over so many years that I'm half expecting you to leap over the studio and hit me with an inflatable hammer while singing a song.
I'm, in fact, very docile. People that know me well know me as being very... I get a bit feisty if I have a few bevvies, but generally fairly quiet.
Because this is the kind of paradox, isn't it? Because you described yourself as being a very sort of quiet, somewhat withdrawn schoolboy.
Mm-hmm.
So where did all this stuff burst out from?
Well, I suppose it really began with art school. And in 1982, I went to art school, and that's probably the year that defined me in many ways, or at least it opened a door for me that I wasn't even aware was available to me in the world that I'd been raised in. I was raised in a large Catholic family, lovely family. I went to a Catholic school, and the areas of interest for me were not of interest to anyone at that educational institution, and so I always felt a bit of an outsider.
And did you feel as if you'd been groomed for a kind of like a proper a proper career as a accountant? Groomed is an unfortunate word when associated with the Catholic education these days.
It's certainly unfortunate in regards to Morris College in Canberra, but yes, groomed, I suppose. As a public servant, perhaps. My father was very high up in the public service. And I did do a brief stint as a banker. I was a teller for a while. And I realised during the 8 months that I was a teller that I just wasn't destined to be in an environment with other people around me. I just had no ability to cope with a work environment. And I thought at that point I must find a different way to exist in society, because I don't think this is the right path for me.
Were you a choir boy?
I was in the choir at Morris for a brief stint of about 2 years when I was in sixth class and first form, or year seven, I think they call it here. But that was it, really.
So, I mean, when you were emerging out into art school, did you have a sense of yourself as having talent in art or in singing?
Oh, no, the singing thing, I'd closed the door on that many, many years earlier. When I was about 12, I suppose, I stopped singing. And that's a story for another time. But I've always been a drawer. Ever since I was a little kid, I always drew. And myself and a good friend of mine, Paul Ullman, went through Morris together, both of us feeling totally like outsiders because we were both scribblers, you know, we were both obsessed with the line. And when we finished school in 79, he and I went to art school to try and get in. He got in and I didn't get in. And it absolutely crushed me completely. But over the next 2 years, he just kept encouraging me to try again. So in 1981, I applied again, and then 1982, I was in.
And what did that do for you? That was the year, as you say, that made you.
Yeah, well, it reoriented my thinking in a certain way. I felt every year that I was at Morris was like a year stepping down, you know, another descent into hell, another level going to some sort of inevitable demise. And the first year I was just totally out of my depth when I went to art school the first time I applied. They had this life drawing, and there was a monumental woman on a dais that we had to draw, and everyone else was getting these giant sheets of butcher's paper, and I'd never done life drawing before, and using great lumps of charcoal to capture this woman in great gestural strokes. But I've always been a tiny little scribbler. I used to, you know, do postage stamp size images. And so when I started drawing it, that's what I did. I filled up one sheet of butcher's with about 27 little tiny drawings of her. And I think the teachers just thought I was absolutely insane. Not quite right.
Where did the singing come in? Because you were busking, and that's where you met your later Doug Anthony colleagues.
once again, Paul Yeoman and myself, we were at the art school at the time. I had a girlfriend, Jacinta, and we had started doing these very abstract little plays. And one night at, I think, Canberra's only food truck in those days, Jacinta ran into a fellow who was picking up some sort of burger at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he was lamenting that he was opening a new cafe, Cafe Boom Boom in Canberra, to try and get a bit of drama, theatre, comedy into the suburbs of Canberra at the Narrabunda Shops. And he said, if we've got one group that I get the All-Stars, we need another group to go on with them. And Jacinta said, I'm in a group. And that's how we first got that entree into that sort of world, totally haphazard and accidental. So myself and Paul and Jacinta performed before the All-Stars. And because we were working in that same space, I started speaking to Richard. Richard and I got along quite well. And eventually, because Robert, who was the original member of the All-Stars before I joined, he had some business to attend to, and one night couldn't perform in the All-Stars shows, so Richard asked me if I'd like to come and sing Robert's parts, and I brought some other things to the show, and it was so extraordinarily successful, Robert never got back in the group, which was a sort of great sadness. But
Although he went on to a UN career.
We don't talk about Robert. Robert's been incredibly successful.
Yes.
He's done very well. He was President Clinton's main attaché when he was working for the UN for many years. So, yeah.
Well, you're still making music. And, in fact, you've got a new EP out.
Have indeed. Been working with the wonderful Stephen Gates. We've known each other for many, many years. And a couple of years ago, we just decided we'd do some songs together. We just want to do pretty songs when we first thought about this. And we had a friend who was...
Here it is.
Yeah.
Here's there a little bit of it.
Oh, this is... Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, this song for Neria.
Dark dogs never sleep. They watch and roam the ground. They raise alarms with razor teeth. Tonight they make no sound. Tell them I am here to hold you.
We won't play the full song, let people track it down to find it, but you're still in beautiful voice.
I think it's getting better. People keep saying it's impossible that, that the range could be more dynamic, that the bass tones could be deeper and more luxuriant. It's like sunshine has been given a sound.
I love a man who can provide his own critique on his own music. But it's true. You know, the funny thing is it's funny, but it's true. And it obviously feeds some part of you to make music. You're doing art as well. You're writing books and you're doing things. And yet, if you look at your website and you look at so much of what you do, there's incredible darkness that you don't hide away from. Mm. You know, you write on your website, sometimes I wonder why I need to make things. There's no use for it. It serves no purpose. If I don't make things, I get angry. If I don't make things, I get upset. There's a sense that if you weren't doing a lot of these things, there'd be some sort of volcanic, result.
I don't know. Certainly, it does irritate me. It causes me irritation if I'm not actively creating something or making something. But I just enjoy that process.
And I think about your film, because you had a fantastically successful short film based on a book you made, which was ostensibly a kid's book, The Girl Who Swallowed Bees.
Yes.
And it's splendid, but by heaven, it's dark. It's about a 10-year-old girl's suicidal impulses. And her redemption only comes after she has attempted to kill herself in the bizarre way of swallowing bees. I feel almost required by some
given,
sort of
you
thing
have given to, the give, plot the, away now,
to give the lifeline number, should you be listening, 13, 11, 14. And that's not something you're normally doing when you're talking about a children's book.
Mm.
The darkness that runs through, you talk about an obsidian darkness that runs through things. Are you making that bit up?
Oh, I don't think I'm making it up, but I still find it very hard to, broach some of the reasons for that darkness. And I, you know, even at the age of, what am I now, 57 or something, I still find it very difficult to talk about certain aspects. I mean, I had a great childhood, I have a great family, raised in Canberra, which is a beautiful town. But still, there seems to be some sort of, you know, something broken or something amiss. But I find that quite a source of creative energy to think about things differently.
Your song, if 1982 was the year that made you, the song you've chosen, and I'm really intrigued, is by Nat King Cole, Nature Boy.
Yeah.
A super song.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
What is it about this?
I was living in a bedsit in Lynham Shops, and everyone that was in these this building, they're all alcoholics. The bedsit was going spare, and so for a number of years, I was someone else. I was the alco at the top of the stairs, and I had a little old stereo in the corner, and I used to play a lot of Joni Mitchell, Blue, I think, and Sarah Vaughan, and as well as all the other, you know, the Mekons or punk sort of groups, the Monotone Set and Gang of Four. But as well as that, there was, you know, Joni Mitchell and Nat King Cole. And this song, I just found it a very powerful and beautiful song. And the simplicity of that lyric, you know, to love and be loved in return, I just thought was just such a beautiful expression.
Ultimately, it is the greatest thing you ever learn.
Yeah, yeah. And so eloquent, so beautifully put. And the idea that it's a story about the Nature Boy, it's just gorgeous.
Well, Paul McDermott, it's such a delight to see you and to know that you're creative and still pumping out magnificent stuff. Here's a little Nat King Cole.
Thanks, Hugh.
There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
How beautiful is that? Nature Boy by Nat King Cole. It's the song chosen by my guest for the year that made me, the wonderful Paul McDermott.